From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The book, authored last year by award-winning journalist and political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, together with filmmaker Stephen Vittoria, now has a companion book, Two, Murder Incorporated, Empire, Genocide, and Manifest Destiny, is a series of three books. And the first book, Dreaming of Empire, was published in 2018. Just out is book two, subtitled America's Favorite Pastime. The ambitious book series explores the history of the United States and takes on the myth that the U.S. is a beacon for freedom and democracy. It's a powerful antidote to the misguided nostalgia of Donald Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again, showcasing in visceral terms just how racism, slavery, genocide, terrorism, and war have long been the basis of the American project. We turn now to co-author Stephen Vittoria, who is an award-winning documentary filmmaker. His films include Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary, and he is Mumia Abu-Jamal's co-author. The book, too, is just out. Welcome back to the program, Stephen.
Sonali, thank you for having, I'd like to say having us on today. Whenever right. I do these things, I never want to forget about my partner, Mumia Abu-Jamal, who sits in a living hell for the last 37 years, and a testament of his courage and of his intellect is found in Murder Incorporated. His words and his work are stellar, and the fact that he does it from inside America's gulag with chains on him is just an amazing testament to his spirit. So he is with us here today. And I actually have some words from him later on that I can share with you guys about book two.
Right. Were he not incarcerated, we could be interviewing the two of you side by side. So let's talk about how different this book, book two, is from the first book, which we had you on about last year. I noticed that book two is significantly thicker than book one.
It's a giant doorstop, that's for sure. And yes, it is, because you know the first book, Dreaming of Empire, laid the foundation, laid the groundwork for the building of the American Empire. You know, 500 years of the march of the Euro-American Empire and the ugly behavior and the bodies left in the wake of the building of that empire. And that is detailed in Dreaming of Empire. Book two, America's Favorite Pastime, is really thick because it's about war, and it's about America's war. And this country, it's good at a lot of things, it's bad at a lot more, but it's really good at waging war and killing people. And when Mumia and I decided to write this entire series, we realized that there was a perp on the loose, and the perp was armed and dangerous. And for centuries, this perp has been killing and maiming people all over the planet. The name of that perp is the United States of America. And I believe even recently, Jimmy Carter has concurred and said so. So we knew that this perp needed to be charged and hopefully convicted. And Murder Incorporated is the dossier. It is the piece of evidence that offers, without a shadow of a doubt, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the United States of America exports murder more than any other country in the world, and maybe even in the history of the planet. You know, one of the big lies of American exceptionalism is that the greatest export the United States has is freedom, liberty, and the dream of democracy. Well, Murder Incorporated, all three books, I think, underscores the idea that the greatest export is murder. And I can actually, if you'd like, Sonali, this leads into Mumia's words.
Yes, please do read from the book. Thank you.
About book one and book two. And these are Mumia's words about both of them and the evolution from one to two. Excuse me. Mumia Abu-Jamal. just as the lives of slaves and indigenous peoples paid for the early growth of the new American nation, so too were lives sacrificed to advance the expansion of empire in the 20th century. Book two in our epic three-part series is a damning account of war and the selling of war in America, revealing how riches, imperial expansion, and the consolidation of power have been the true aim of American wars and covert actions, both at home and abroad. The seeds of exceptionalism and divine entitlement, whose planting is detailed in Book One, Dreaming of Empire, yield Book Two, America's Favorite Pastime, and the Nightmarish Side of the American Century.
So there are, of course, so many wars we could be discussing. It reminds me of that list that William Bloom, one of the historians whose work you cite in the book, had made of the lengthy list of wars and interventions that the U.S. has engaged in over the years that has resulted in the overthrow of governments and interventions. It's an incredibly long list, one that most of the American public is unfamiliar with, right?
Absolutely. And always when we were writing this, Bill Blum, who you just mentioned, was a real backbone to a lot of the work that we did. And the entire series, and Mumia loves to talk about this, is an homage and embrace of the great historian Howard Zinn. And someone called Murder Incorporated Howard Zinn on steroids. And I think it is, because the book is, it takes on some pretty heavy subjects. And these subjects can really, as you know, you fight it every day of your life, Sonali, they can really weigh on you, and they can, it's a horrific story. And it's not about the flag waving, and it's not about the patriotism and the love of country that we hear about so much, but it's about the dead bodies, and there are millions of them. And in this book, we attempt to talk about not only the overt wars, but the covert wars. What we go through, the book opens up with World War I, the Great Meat Grinder. And World War I was a horrific escapade in human failure. It defined human failure on every level. And with the advent of the machine gun, chemical gas, dropping bombs from airplanes, it was a meat grinder. And we start there. That leads into the war after the war to end all wars. And, you know, America fought World War II, and it's widely known as the Good War. I can tell you when people read this, especially, I doubt if you will, but especially Steven Spielberg, I'll never work with him again, because we take on Saving Private Ryan and we take on World War II from 1917 all the way through to 1945, because you have to tell the whole story. The Japanese didn't wake up on December 6th and say, you know, tomorrow I think we ought to bomb Pearl Harbor. There's a history to it. And like our good friend Gore Vidal, who is also through this book, famously said, this is the United States of amnesia. And I think that defines a lot of what we put forth. The biggest chapter in the book, it's a monster, and it's about the CIA. And the title, so I get it right, is Interventions Are Us, Building Empire One Dirty Covert Action at a Time. And, you know, playing off the name of Kids Are Us, this is a giant litany. And it goes back to what you were saying about Bill Blum. It goes back to the amazing number of covert actions and regime changes from 1947, right after World War II, to this very moment. And it's a searing critique of the Central Intelligence Agency and their ugly, vicious, just absolutely horrific history. From there, we took on the military-industrial complex. And the very first thing we took on was Dwight Eisenhower, because peace advocates all over the planet use his his few words during his last speech as if it was Arlo Guthrie or Woody Guthrie or Phil Oakes or you know, somebody just, you know, with peace in their blood. And nothing could be further from the truth. And I think that's another thing that Mumy and I tried to do. We tried to bring stories and people and little known facts into all three books. We didn't want this to be a rehash of what Professor Zinn did or what other historians have done. We wanted to find some of those nuggets and those gems and take on some ideas that, you know, are so popular and they're just part of iconic American history. And they become part of the lie. They become part of American exceptionalism. And I think we've done that in all three books.
So, Stephen, essentially, yeah, this book series is one that sounds like it needs to be required reading, particularly among that section of the U.S. population that has been raised on a steady diet of glorifying American ideals, and who imagine that the United States has lived up to those ideals, especially outside the country. It's very easy to not see what we have done outside the country, but the rest of the world knows, right? I mean, this idea that that the United States may make mistakes, but we have our heart in the right place because we are this beacon of democracy. You know, we look back even at wars that were criminal as mistakes, but they weren't, right? They were right from the start, you know, had criminal nefarious intents.
There's that old saying, I don't know who said it, but kill one person, call it murder. Kill a million, call it foreign policy. And I think that sums up exactly what you're saying, that American exceptionalism, that this country has been deigned by God Almighty to run the planet. And it doesn't really matter what the United States of America does. It just matters that their heart is in the right place. And we could ask the 4 million Southeast Asians that were slaughtered. That's genocide in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. The numbers, we could go on and on and on with how those play out in a, no pun intended, in a domino effect throughout Southeast Asia and in this country. You know, when they talk about the war in Vietnam, and rightfully so, they talk about the 58,000 plus American soldiers that were killed, the numbers that were wounded, and those are horrific numbers. Rarely does anyone talk about the 3 to 4 million Southeast Asians. I mean, the number is so high, it's just horrific to think about. No one ever talks about that. And I think that gets to exactly what you're talking about. You know, the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We go into great detail about what was actually going on in this country and how Harry Truman generals were pleading with him that he didn't have to do this, that this was the road to peace. And the United States of America wanted to drop a giant commercial to the Soviet Union to ensure that they knew that there was a new cop on the block or a new sheriff on the block, and it was the United States of America. And in the World War II chapter, we go into great detail about that. Obviously, we cover the Vietnam War, and that is that's another searing chapter. We wanted to include probably the most unknown of America's wars, and it's what happened in East Timor in the 1970s, and that is a harrowing story of hundreds of thousands of people being killed at the hands of Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger and the Indonesian government. And I think a lot of your viewers will know what Amy Goodman and Alan Nairn went through in the 90s when this continued. And all of that is documented in great detail in Murder Incorporated Book 2.
Wow. So that particular part of the world, Southeast Asia, certainly gets short shrift in our historical memory. What we know more about, of course, is the Middle East. Those wars go, many of them continue today. And many of them started decades ago, much before we even sort of realize, right? I mean, you discuss in your book about Libya, a country that we have much more of a recent foothold in, but our interventionism goes back many decades there. I mean, and there are many, many other countries in the Middle East just like that. And I'm just thinking about the Amnesty International report that found just a couple of years ago, just last year, how over a period of several months, US bombing directly killed 1,600 civilians in one city alone. So that bloodbath continues today. It has a long history and it doesn't seem to have an end in sight.
No, it doesn't. And one of the reasons, you bring up a good point, one of the reasons in book two we did not categorize or embrace America's wars in the Middle East is because they're ongoing and there are so many of them. So we deal with it in book three. I think if we dealt with it in book two, which is already 504 pages, and the price didn't go up from book one because Mumi and I, we don't want to charge by the page or the word. We wanted to keep that separate for book three, and I think that's it was a really good decision on our part. But yeah, I mean, if you go back to, you know, if you go back to Iran with, you know, Mossadegh back in 1953, and you know, and we weave a number of those stories through book one and book two because you can't write about American exceptionalism and the American government without dealing with the Middle East. And but book two is a real historic piece, and with the number of changes that are just daily going on in Yemen and in Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran, we wanted to try to keep this as historical as possible. But we are dealing with it, and it has been dealt with in book three.
Now, a little bit closer to this hemisphere is something that you do spend a lot of time in this book too, which is the relationship between Ronald Reagan and Noriega, Alberto Noriega, the Panamanian dictator. And this is also a history that we don't know enough about, at least the general public in the US doesn't know enough about, right?
No, they don't realize that during the Reagan administration, the thousands and thousands, and again, you know, numbers are not important, but you know, reputable organizations have put the numbers, you know, between 70 and 100,000 people in Central America. It was absolutely horrific what went on down there. And really, under the cover of night, you know, when Mumia talked about the nightmarish side of the American century, so much happens in a covert way. You know, when we think about Fort Benning and you know, the School of the Assassins down there, and what the CIA and the U.S. government was doing in Central America is horrific. So when you hear people waxing poetic about Ronald Reagan, it's if it wasn't so sad, it would be laughable because these people are murderers. People are afraid. They're afraid to say that America lies, and they're afraid to say that America's leaders are murderers. And the bodies are the living proof of that. I mean, we look at what George W. Bush and his father did in the Middle East. How these people can sleep at night is absolutely amazing. This is mass murder on a worldwide scale that just gets brushed under the carpet, under the mat. And that's why books like this, like the work that Bill Blum did, like the work that Howard Zinn did and Noam Chomsky, and there's a litany of people that we followed. And it's so important that these stories get out. And one of the things that was important to Mumia and I were to include as many potent voices in Murder Incorporated, all three books, as we possibly could. And we got great clearances from so many historians that allowed us to weave their work into into our work, because we didn't want it to just be, you know, Mumi and I, you know, yelling and screaming from a street corner. You know, this is a very academic book. The endnotes in all three books are substantial. The index is substantial. You know, so the book walks on both sides of the street. It is very academic, and at the same time, it's lively, it's irreverent, and believe it or not, it can be funny, because I think when you deal with these subjects, there's a lot of humor. So you'll be on one page, it's a very academic description of something in the Central Intelligence Agency, and then you have George Carlin talking about it, or you have Walter White from Breaking Bad talking about Empire. We weaved in a lot of pop culture things because we wanted the book to also be embraced by young people, because unfortunately, I don't have a whole heck of a lot of faith in the baby boomers and the people that I grew up with, because if we look around, how's that going? That's not going so well. So I think we have to look to young people. You know, when I hear people talking about millennials and they, you know, all the degradation, it's horrific, because I meet young people with this book constantly. There's a quick story I'd like to tell you, and it's about a guy named Jeremy. And we had a book release party recently, and Alice Walker was there, and Angela Davis was there, and I was thrilled to, you know, Alice Walker was, you know, telling me how much she loved the book, and I was embarrassed, because to be even in the same breath with Alice Walker and Angela Davis is kind of intimidating. And there was this fellow named Jeremy there, and he was at the first book release we had up in Oakland a year ago. And he walked up to me, and he had a backpack on, and he reached into his backpack, and he pulled out this dog-eared copy of the paperback of Dreaming of Empire, the first book. And he just wanted to say how much it changed his life, and it wanted to get him back into teaching. And I told that story to Mumia, and he said, "That's why we wrote this book. These are the people, you know, forget about our compatriots. They're gone. They've already screwed everything up. Let's look at the young people. Let's look at people that actually we've left this horrific planet to, that's not only dying from war and from empire, but it's dying from ecological genocide." Or suicide, actually.
Stephen, the business of war, unfortunately, has been a bipartisan affair for a long time, although there have been brave objectors in the halls of Congress every now and then. But by and large, it's been something that, you know, conservatives and liberals have essentially agreed on. To question American empire and military supremacy is equated with being unpatriotic. And today that equation is stronger than ever, right? I mean, somehow even questioning a war means that you're undermining the sanctity of our veterans and insulting and disrespecting America's veterans and soldiers and military men and women. So how do you combat that? Because history is history. There's no, you know, two ways to interpret a massacre. When you massacre innocent people, there's no other way to interpret it other than it being a criminal thing. And yet there are people who will wear blinders because they just don't want to believe that the U.S. could be capable of such horrors.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better than you, Sonali. It's, you know, I mean, look at what happened with Julian Assange. You know, WikiLeaks releases that horrific helicopter gunship. You can't even call it a battle. It was a slaughter. They attacked the messenger. And he's attacked by other journalists around him. You know, the New York Times and the Washington Post had no problem publishing this stuff, but they won't back people that are actually the courageous ones that are releasing this stuff. And, you know, we hear this all the time about being un-American. And quite frankly, I'm kind of with Thomas Paine. I don't want to be American. I want to be a citizen of the planet. And that's really all I care about. These boundaries and flags are, and the religious blood that's on everybody's hands is really what's put this, you know, distant rock in such a horrific position right now, where we're ready. You know, it's like Chomsky said, hegemony or survival. It's, you know, I just laugh at those things. I laugh at, you know, when a guy like Colin Kaepernick comes out and, you know, courageously, you know, takes a knee and says, no, not in my name. And he's just vilified. The man is a hero. Howard Zinn is a hero. People that fight these lies and of course the murderers want us to think that. I mean, that's how they sell war. And we finished the book, or almost finished the book, with a chapter on military recruitment, which is entitled Cannon Fodder for Capitalism. And really, it's about the soul-sucking nature of military recruitment, of taking my kid or your kid and trying to brainwash them into going to either die or kill somebody for some nebulous reason about freedom or liberty. And we know that it's about capitalism.
Right. You can't fight wars if there's no soldiers to fight them.
No. And someone like Arundhati Roy is absolutely right, where she says wars will never stop until the people that deliver the triggers, the people that make the guns, the FedEx driver that has to drive something from one place, the blood is on all of their hands. Unfortunately, the blood is on our hands as well as taxpayers. We fund these things, and it's just, there's enough blood to go around in this country. And I think that's what Murder Incorporated is about. It's about not buying the BS anymore. If, you know, Mumi and I was kidding before about the price of the book. You know, obviously Mumi is in prison, and frankly, I don't need the money. Mumi doesn't have any way to spend the money. This is not about making money. This is about saying that when the two of us are gone, we looked at the American Empire square in the eye and said, we didn't buy your crap. We didn't buy your lies, and we didn't buy your murder. And ultimately, if that's what I can leave, if that's what Mumia can leave behind, we're really proud of it. So if they want to call us un-American, I can raise my hand. It's like when they asked Dick Gregory, found out he was on Richard Nixon's enemy list. He said, quick, where do I call this to, you know, sign up?
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Stephen, and good luck with book two.
Thank you, Sonali. And thank you for all the hard work and the daily courageous work that you do. I'm a big fan of what you do, and I listen to you or watch you every day, and keep on swinging.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Really appreciate it. My guest has been Stephen Vittori, award-winning documentary filmmaker whose films include Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary. He's the co-author with Mumia Abu-Jamal of a series of three books, Murder Incorporated, Empire, Genocide, and Manifest Destiny. Book one was subtitled Dreaming of Empire, and book two, just out, is subtitled America's Favorite Pastime. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.